Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies.
Yeah!
You have chosen wisely.
No! No! I will not sacrifice the podcast. We've made too many compromises already. Too many retreats. They invade our space and we fall back. They assimilate entire worlds and we fall back. Not again. The line must be drawn here. This far, no further. And I will make them listen to Mike and Mike go to the movie.
I think it would have been better if it ended with a plug for our podcast. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think so too. We're assimilating... Jean-Luc Picard's dialogue into a plug for Mike Mike go to the movies. Was that an okay Picard? Did you feel like Patrick Stewart was in the room with you right now?
He was right. Yeah. Just move through you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man beginning to see the metaphor between himself and Captain Ahab.
Mike DiCruccio.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. I think it's funny that even in the year 2065 or the 24th century or whatever, I guess Picard is for the 24th century, even then people wouldn't really remember, still don't really remember Moby Dick.
they got the basic gist of it, but then yeah. I think one of them was like, oh yeah, you know, I get it, but I haven't read it.
That's how I got a master's degree. It's like, yeah, I basically got it.
Yeah, you got the spark notes. You got the whole thing.
Yeah.
What's been going on in the life of Mike DiCruccio?
Not a whole lot. Computer stuff, like I was talking about last week, it got delivered today. So I'm going to be building a new PC. That's
nice.
Very exciting, but also scary.
Yeah.
Because what if break, you know?
Sure.
What if break?
What if break? That is something you have to ask yourself. I hope it doesn't, because we got to record podcasts.
Because we got a podcast, baby. The show must go on.
Exactly. Yeah, you're going to be recording on a tin can for, for the next few episodes.
I'll have to bust out my laptop that can barely work. Remember those days, Mike?
Yes. Yeah. I do remember that, actually. Yeah, because that was the reason you got the PC, was because it like was basically non-functional, right? Like it just shut down one day.
Yeah, it wouldn't hold a Wi-Fi connection.
Right.
It just like wouldn't connect at all anymore. Or it would go up and down. I'd watch the bar go three bars, one bar, three bars, one bar, which is real hard to record a podcast on.
Yes, that does make it difficult. And I had to do the same thing a few years ago. And I've got my, I mean, I have a laptop. I didn't build a PC. I'm not a genius like you, Mike. But
few people are.
Yeah. so far my laptop's still working, which is nice.
That's good.
That was a harrowing expense when I had to buy a new laptop.
Yeah.
But yeah, there it is. So we are going to be talking about Star Trek First Contact today, Mike. Which,
goddamn right we are.
Yes, and we're going to get to that in just a few minutes. But first, I think we have to make an announcement.
Yes.
Mike, on this episode of the podcast. And, you know, it's, you know, somewhat sad news, I guess, if you're a fan of Mike go to the movies. But I think it's ultimately better for the both of us.
Yes. So
that's good, right? That's a plus.
That is a huge pro personally for the two of us. Yes.
Yes. So Mike and I have been talking about the state of the podcast over the last few months. And we've recently been recording the Complete Works, the Roy Scheider season, which is going to start publishing in like a month or so, maybe. We're not putting a firm date on that quite yet. But, you know, we've both been feeling maybe a little bit burned out.
Yes.
By doing two podcasts every single week.
For years now, at
for
this point.
Years, yes. I mean, we've been doing these podcasts since 2015. We've been doing them for 9 years. That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. For a podcast with numbers like ours, we shouldn't be doing.
It felt like in 2015, it was like, man, podcast is so crowded. And it's been 9 years since
right.
then.
Now there's more podcasts, if you can believe it.
Yes. And we're not ending. I guess we should say that now. It's not over.
Exactly, yes.
Because the preamble we just did, if I was a listener, I would think we're about to end the show. But we're not
right.
ending the show.
No, we're not ending the show, but we are downsizing it a little
yes.
bit. So we've decided to make The Complete Works our flagship show. Like, that's going to be the show that, you know, we'll have a new episode every week, all that kind of stuff. Mike and Mike Go to the Movies is going to go down to once every other week. So every 2 weeks.
Yes.
We'll still have a new episode of Mike Go to the Movies, but we're not going to be publishing the episodes on this feed for that much longer. If you're only subscribed to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, you will eventually run out of episodes.
Yes, it will end eventually.
So instead, what we're going to be doing is basically releasing Mike and Mike Go to the Movies every other week as a bonus episode to The Complete Works. So if you want to continue listening to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, if you're not already subscribed to The Complete Works, you should subscribe over there, because then you'll still be able to get all your fun Mike and Mike action that you love so very much.
Correct. Yeah, we're going to keep doing all the same episode types, you know, discussions, Mike Makes Mike Watch, guest makes us watch, paid for episodes, all the usual stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But we're just going to downsize.
Yeah, paid for episodes, Mike Makes Mike Watch. We'll still be doing one of those a month, and we'll be doing discussions, all that stuff. And we'll still do, you know, your Oscars recap, your top 10 episode at the end of the year. You know, there are annual in-person episode where we all pick a movie to watch and talk about it. You know, all the staples of the podcast will still be intact. There will just be less of this podcast because it's becoming kind of taxing.
It is a lot.
To do both.
It is a lot for the 25 of you that listen.
Yes.
Which we appreciate a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we love it. We appreciate it. If you are able to, we'd love a donation. That'd be great.
That'd be great.
But so unfortunately, we kind of came to this decision. I don't think we're like too broken up about it. You know, I think it's something that, you know, because the podcast is still going on. You know, it's still continuing. You'll still hear the Mike and Mike theme on those bonus episodes. Like, it's basically going to be in its exact same form. It'll just be in a different place every other week instead of every week.
Correct. Yeah. And I'm already picturing excited about, you know, we'll have our two standard episodes and then us being like, we got to talk about whatever and we'll do an extra one or whatever. You know, just it'll be nice to not be committed to having to do two podcasts every week.
Yeah.
Forever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot of recording. It's a lot of editing. You know, I edit The Complete Works pretty much by myself, but Kyle Cullen, who is our music supervisor / editor for Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. And I feel like we never give him enough credit for editing this podcast.
Yes.
We always just call him the music supervisor. He's been editing Mike and Mike Go to the Movies for the last couple of years now at this point.
Since the pandemic, at least. Yeah.
And he's been great about having like a fast turnaround because we record him on Tuesdays and we've been publishing on Thursdays. But, you know, in that time, he's had children. And it's
twins.
He has two kids. That's crazy. Kyle, if you're listening to this, great job, man.
I mean, I think he has to listen to this.
I think he has to, unless he's been pretending to edit the podcast all these years. I never listened back. I wouldn't know.
He's just been putting out nothing but fart noises, and that's why we have 25 people.
Exactly. So we want to give a shout out to Kyle because give him a lot of credit for editing the podcast over the last few years. It's also becoming, you know, more of a thing for him. He has kids now. And so I think having one every other week will help us with kind of that flow of episodes and all that kind of stuff. So that's what's going on. We are downsizing Mike and Mike Go to the Movies, and we're going to stop publishing episodes on this Mike and Mike feed pretty soon. Basically, once The Complete Works starts, like the new season of The Complete Works starts, that's when we're going to stop publishing episodes over here. And that's when we'll make the transition to like one every 2 weeks. So in the meantime, we're going to be publishing these episodes on both feeds, starting with this episode. So that'll make the transition a little bit easier for you if you want to just jump over to The Complete Works and subscribe over there. Because right now, The Complete Works feed is empty. We haven't been publishing anything because we've been recording Roy Scheider stuff.
Right. Yeah, we're in, I was going to say pre-production, but we're in the recording phase. We want to have a couple episodes in the bank ready to go before we start releasing them, just in case scheduling things or just to have some lead time, because we are usually flying by the seat of our pants. And that's, you know, been part of the problem. It's like, hey, we have 2 days for this thing to be finished.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We're gonna be working on that. Yeah, it'll be cool to start publishing them on both, I think. And then we'll have more specific dates as we get closer, but in the next month or two we'll transition to bi-weekly for Mike and Mike, and then Complete Works every week.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus Complete Works, I mean, we might have a bonus episode of The Complete Works here and there over the next couple of months because Nick Cage's new horror movie out, Arcadian.
Two horror movies coming out this year, right?
Yes, but that one's Long Legs is in July. Arcadian, I believe, is out in select theaters now, or it's going to be very soon.
Right.
And then there's also They Shot the Piano Player, the new Jeff Goldblum pseudo documentary animated thing, which I know has played certain theaters, but is not available on video on demand yet, so we can't watch it yet.
Right. When's Wicked coming out, which is both of Michelle Yeoh and Jeff Goldblum?
That's end of the year. We got some
that's
time
end
for
of
that
the year.
One.
Okay.
That's I believe like Thanksgiving or Christmas or something like that.
I could have seen that coming.
Yeah, we got a ways till that one. That might have to be like our end of year in-person episode. There's not that many big movies coming out at the end of the year right now. It's like that or Nosferatu, which, I mean, that would be cool too. That'd be great. But yeah, that we're getting ahead of ourselves there. That might be a little while till we get to that. But yeah, so there you go. To recap, Mike and I go to the movies, downsizing to bi-weekly episodes, and the episodes are going to be moving onto the Complete Works feed in the near future. So if you're not subscribed over there, get subscribed. And with that, we can move on into the main subject of the episode, Mike. We got a donation, a $50 donation to our Ko-fi page, which you can still do. Anybody can donate $50 to our Ko-fi page.
If there's one thing we're not doing, it's turning off the Ko-fi page.
You can donate $50 to our Ko-fi page. And if you do, we will record an episode about anything you want. Essentially, within reason, I guess we should say.
Yeah. Asterisk mostly.
Yeah. Mostly. If we turn it down, I guess we can refund your money maybe or something. I don't know how Ko-fi works. Or we'll just tell you to pick something else.
Yeah.
That could work too. But we got a donation, $50 from, I believe, David, right, Mike?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Friend of the pod, David. Thank you, David.
Friend of the pod, David, who I believe also made us watch the Dungeons and Dragons movies last year, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So yeah, he donated last year and made us watch two D&D movies. He made us watch the 2000 Dungeons and Dragons and the new Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. This time around, David is making us watch Star Trek First Contact. Now, David is not the one who made us watch Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan a few months ago. I believe, was that Jake?
That might have been Jake. I think that was Jake. I don't remember off the top of my head, actually.
I'm pretty sure it was Jake that made us watch Star Trek II. If not, I mean, Jake is listening. I know he's like one of the people I know listens to pretty much every episode. And I know he's listening to Star Trek First Contact. So if it wasn't you, Jake, I'm sorry. I apologize for misattributing Star Trek II to you. I know he made us watch Freddy Got Fingered. That was a Jake pick for sure.
Which is now on the Criterion Channel. Incredible. Yeah. Where Vindication. It belongs?
Yeah. Question mark.
I just remember by the end of that episode, we had talked ourselves into Freddy Got Fingered being a masterpiece. We started off hating that movie by the time we got to the end.
Yeah, I don't know if I hated it to start off with, but I was very much like, yeah, it's okay. You know, there's some segments that I thought were kind of funny, but like I was watching it at like 1 p.m. by myself. It was like, it wasn't the best. Like I needed a group of stone friends to be around to really appreciate Freddy Got Fingered. And apparently the Criterion feels the same.
Yes.
I mean, that's part of their like their Razzies list, like their category, which is a great idea for a series. Just all the like the best movies that the Razzies like gave worst picture to or something. So it's Freddy Got Fingered, it's Showgirls, it's Under the Cherry Moon, it's a bunch of
cruising
wild stuff in there. Yeah, Cruising, which rules. So yeah, pretty cool. And so yeah, Star Trek First Contact is the subject of today's episode. And so let's get into it, Mike. It's time for Star Trek First Contact.
Imagine a race of beings possessed of one mind, driven by one will, intent on one purpose, to seize our past and control our future.
Set a course for Earth. Maximum warp.
Now, one captain against orders.
Red alert! All hands to battle stations!
Must succeed where all others have failed.
It looks like the control deck's 26 up to 11.
They have assimilated more than half the ship.
Surrender yourself or we will destroy your ship.
The line must be drawn here.
On November 22nd, resistance is futile. Star Trek, First Contact.
All right, that was from the trailer for Star Trek First Contact from 1996, directed by Jonathan Frakes, who also plays Riker in the Star Trek Next Generation cast. And yeah, Star Trek First Contact. So I was excited about this one, Mike, because it gave me an excuse to continue watching my Star Trek movies.
Yes.
So to recap, we talked about Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan on this podcast a few months ago. A movie we both really liked. We had a good time with Wrath of Khan. But in that time, I was like, well, you know what? I am a casual Star Trek guy. I have seen some episodes of the original series. I've seen a little bit of Next Generation. I had never watched any of the movies besides the J.J. Abrams reboot trilogy.
Right.
And so before Wrath of Khan, I watched Star Trek the Motion Picture, which is a masterpiece. And everyone should watch it. Yeah, it's unbelievable. One of the best movies ever made. And after I watched Wrath of Khan, I also watched Star Trek 3 and 4, Search for Spock and The Voyage Home, because 2, 3, and 4 are all like one kind of complete arc in the series. Like they all kind of tell a continuous story. And so I watched all of those, and my plan was to finish out my Blu-ray set. I had the Blu-ray set of the original 6 movies, like all the ones with the original cast.
Right.
And then after 4, I just kind of fell off of it. I think maybe because I had heard Star Trek 5 was bad and like never got I was like, I'm going to watch it eventually, but never did. And so when Star Trek First Contact came up, it was like, okay, I got to catch up to First Contact. I got to watch all the movies before I get to that, because First Contact is the 8th one.
yeah, you can't go to the 8th movie without knowing what happens.
Exactly, you know? And that's also the thing. Like, I am less familiar with the Next Generation cast, so I felt that like if I watched the movies at least, I would like have a better grasp of what was going on in First Contact. So that was kind of my thought process. And so I watched Star Trek 5. It is, you know, it's not great. I do think it's better than some people give it credit for, but it's an okay. It's the one that William Shatner directed.
Right.
Yeah, there are some scenes in there that are just real stupid. But there's also some really fun stuff, and it's largely about like Captain Kirk confronting God in a really fun and interesting way. Yeah, that like even at their worst, these movies get like really like heady and esoteric and all that stuff, which I enjoy. So I watched Star Trek 5. It was okay, but it was easily the worst of the ones that I watched so far. Then I watched Star Trek 6, The Undiscovered Country, which is a masterpiece. It's a phenomenal film.
Which is better, 1 or 6?
You know, that's the debate that I've been having in my head.
Okay, all right.
And I got to say, I think I'm giving the edge to 1. Only because I think 1 is that one's the one directed by Robert Wise, director of West Side Story and The Haunting and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original, I think. He didn't do that one. He did Day the Earth Stood Still. A lot of big movies, and you know, he's a real filmmaker, you know, and yeah. It really feels like they're aping 2001: A Space Odyssey, and like it goes into some really wild, weird places that I just found so enthralling. But Star Trek VI, as the finale to this entire saga with the Enterprise crew, with the original cast, it's so, so good. It brings back Nicholas Meyer, who is the director of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which is like the consensus choice for best Star Trek movie, although I would say it's the 4th best of the ones that
you madman. You absolute madman.
I would say I would go 1, 6, 4, 2 would be my
look, Mike, we're trying to keep subscribers right now. Yeah. What are you
I think we just told people that we need to jettison subscribers over to the other feed, actually.
That's what I mean. We need as many of these people to come over to the next feed with us. And you're like, nah, Wrath of Khan's number 4, the 4th best.
It's the 4th best. It's good. It's good, but you know, I like the one with the whales better. What can I say? But Star Trek VI rules. It is a phenomenal finale. It's got Christopher Plummer as a Klingon who has an eye patch and he's spouting Shakespeare the entire time.
You know what? I'm in. I don't need to see it. I'm in.
It's incredible. And it's such a good sign off for the entire original cast. So I really love that. And then I watched Star Trek Generations, which is the 7th one. And so that is the first one with the Next Generation cast. And I have less I've seen Next Generation like here and there, but I've never like really just sat down like, I'm going to watch Next Generation for a while. That's never been a thing for me. I've always been more of the original Trek watcher if I'm going to watch any Trek. And so watched Generations, and it was kind of meant as a transitional movie into the Next Generation cast. Like, Generations came out right when Next Generation ended. And so that's also kind of the weird thing to think
that's
about.
That's so weird.
Yeah. It's kind of the weird thing to think about. Like, all the movies with the old Trek cast were, like, coming out as Next Generation was on TV. Like, Star Trek 4, 5, and 6, Next Generation was still happening. Like, it was all it was already there. And so Generations was kind of like, you know, the studio kind of hedging their bets a little bit because they weren't sure if people would turn out in theaters for the Next Generation cast. But truly it was like Next Generation ended in May of 94. Generations comes out like 4 months later. Like it's that. And so it's a movie that's largely the Next Generation cast, but William Shatner is also in it. You know, it kind of like has Captain Kirk displaced in time and kind of comes back for the finale. So the opening like 20 minutes or so, or 15, 20 minutes is Captain Kirk with Scotty and not McCoy, Chekhov. It's Scotty and Chekhov. They're the only ones that come back from the original cast for this one. And it's Captain Kirk at like, you know, he's post-retirement. He's like kind of there as a PR stunt to like see the Enterprise off with a new crew kind of thing. And Alan Ruck is the captain of the ship. And Sulu's daughter is part of the crew, which is a kind of a fun detail. And I really liked the first 15 minutes of it. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm in. I love watching Captain Kirk. I'll get to see him do some action. And then I'll get to see him interacting with the Next Generation cast. And that'll be my transition into it. And then he disappears for like an hour and a half and then shows up at the very end of the movie. And it's real disappointing. And then Kirk dies. It's like, well, this is a bummer. And the movie doesn't really do much to like introduce you to the Next Generation cast. Like they're kind of just, there's a time jump. It's like 73 years later. And now it's just the Next Generation cast doing their thing. And so I got it for the most part. Cause I was like, I know who Data is. I know who Riker is. Like all that stuff. But it was definitely like, I feel less connected to these characters than I do the original series cast. So there was that. And so that's where I left off and went into Star Trek First Contact. And First Contact, pretty good. I really enjoyed it. It's nice. It's a good time. I definitely felt more comfortable with the Next Generation cast in this one and enjoyed all those characters and the way they played off each other. And Picard is great in it and all that stuff. I did think it was like, you know, it's not nearly as good as some of the best Star Trek movies that I've seen so far. But I know this is like the consensus choice for like the best Next Generation movie. Based on what I've seen, I believe it. This seems about right. From what I know about Insurrection and Nemesis, which is the other two Next Generation movies, it doesn't seem like it's going to get better than this one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Next Generation is sort of like my Star Trek a little bit. I'm not like super into Star Trek in general. But somebody that I lived with in college was very into Next Generation. And when we lived together, they were, I think, all on Netflix, like the whole series.
Okay. They're all on HBO Max right now.
The TV show, not the movies.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
The Next Generation TV show was just all on Netflix. So she was just like, I'm going to watch all of it. Like, and, you know, as happens when somebody in the living room is watching a thing, you're like, well, I'll sit down. And then you just kind of watch it. So I didn't watch all of it. I was not like following along, but I watched a pretty big handful of episodes and stuff and really enjoyed it. And then I can't remember one time, I think it was after I'd come home, I found out that BBC America, at least at this point, just in the daytime, just plays Star Trek Next Generation. Like it would just be on for 4 hours a day or whatever. You're like, okay, I'm just gonna watch some of this again.
Cool.
So I have some like, you know, passing familiarity and stuff, and then like just pretty into Next Generation in general. So and I had watched First Contact once before in college. So I knew it was good. I remember having a lot of fun with it and really liked it. So on this rewatch for me, it was just like, hell yeah, fist pump, like having so much fun. But I forgot the like continuity of it all, like that this is also after the series has ended. So I'm like, where's Geordi's visor? Why does he have regular eye? like what's that about? And I remember you mentioned, I think in Generations is when Data gets the like emotion chip or whatever. And so like they reference that in this movie and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's fun. So yeah, I don't know. I think this movie feels like a pretty long episode of Star Trek to me. And I think some of those best movies are that also, you know, have that feeling to it. So I was just like having so much fun when the Borg is attacking at the very beginning, this whole thing. And they're like, we're going to follow them through this temporal tunnel or whatever. And you're just like, fuck yeah, whatever you said, it doesn't make sense, but I'm in. Like, that's so much fun. And the Borg, I think, is just like one of the coolest ideas of an enemy. This just sort of like cybernetic robot thing that just is to self-replicate and assimilate everything in the universe into this collective consciousness. And the idea that you can only ever use like one attack or one weapon or one solution or whatever to stop the Borg in their tracks once, because as soon as they encounter it, they assimilate it into their whatever, and they know how to defend against it.
Right.
And that threat of like, how do you ultimately defeat this thing that you have to do it once, right? It's this whole thing. So it's very fun, and it's got this cool ticking clock with the they end up the day before humanity makes first contact with a alien race, and they realize that, and it's that whole idea of like they know this from their history textbooks, and like that whole thing with James Cromwell and stuff, and they have to help him achieve faster than light travel so that they can make first contact, and if they don't, the Enterprise will stop existing. Like that whole thing is so fun. So yeah, I just had a really like it's just a cool action sci-fi adventure romp, and I love the little details and stuff, and in particular James Cromwell just being like, I forget his character's actual name, but James Cromwell's
Zefram Cochran.
How could I forget? They say it so many times in the movie. just being like an alcoholic farmer guy that just like is obsessed with like rockabilly music, like old school 50s music and stuff, and in the year 2065. So yeah, just I love this movie, and it made me want to be like, man, I should rewatch TNG. I should go back and watch some of those. You know, I don't know if I want to do like a series rewatch, but like, I don't know, I'll just find some episodes and watch them because they're fun.
Yeah, it's funny. You're like, I would have been, you know, I was in college around the same time as you, and your roommate watching Next Generation at that time. I watched original series around that time. I watched the original Star Trek, and that was one of those things where I was watching it, and I kind of fell off of it fairly quickly. But I think I watched like 20-ish episodes or so of the original series. And it was one of those things where like, it's a difficult one to binge because it's not like, it's not really meant for that. A lot of it's slow moving.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, you know, dated in some ways. A lot of it's fun, but it is just like, you can do like an episode at a time. You know, it's tough to watch like 3 or 4 episodes at once, kind of start to feel it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, yeah, 2 to 3 was like kind of my limit in a go. But I don't know. There's something about TNG for me that just feels a little more, I mean, I guess, you know, it's the late 80s, early 90s. It feels a little more like alive and fun. And I assume they also did like holodeck episodes and stuff on the original series that I don't know about. I just never seen those, but
I think they're mostly a Next Generation thing.
Oh, really? Because those are still like some of my favorite stuff. Like when that happens in First Contact, obviously you knew what's going on. But like,
right. Yeah. I knew that only because, so I I've seen a little bit of Next Generation, but I knew about the concept of the holodeck from Community and the Dreamatorium.
Yep.
Which was like directly a reference to the holodeck from Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would do episodes where it's like, they're going to go, it's a Western and it's, they're going to have the square off at the end in town at high noon and stuff. And then it comes back and they're on the Enterprise and you're just like, what? Like, they're just like having a goof.
I do enjoy that. Like, you know, whenever they're not like in battle, it seems like they're just playing pretend in the holodeck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, so that episode, that sequence in First Contact when they have the Borg chase them into the holodeck, and it's that like 1920s gangster thing, like, and like that's what there was an arc with those that like Jimmy the Nose or whatever his name is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where they're like, Picard wants to be the detective, so there's just like a couple episodes or whatever where they're just are in a 1920s gangster noir thing, and so they like have that, they're like kind of playing the hits in this movie, which is pretty fun.
Nice. And that includes bringing back the Borg, too, which, you know, that, so that's, I wasn't like I, again, sort of knew what the Borg was before this movie, because I was sort of like, I had heard the name Borg before, and was able to kind of grasp pretty quickly what had happened, like with the Borg and stuff. And I think this movie does a pretty good job of like, even though I hadn't seen the episodes where Patrick Stewart gets assimilated into the Borg, and all that, I think it does a pretty good job of like showing you what happened and like kind of giving you like much more so than Generations, which just kind of throws you in with the Next Generation cast.
Right.
This movie was like, okay, we have to assume that some people have not seen the TV show, or, you know, are jumping into this without having seen much of it, or especially back then when it was like, you know, it was much more episodic. It wasn't like totally serialized storytelling, and you had to assume like people would watch like one of every 5 episodes of a show or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it did a pretty good job of like introducing to me who the Borg were and Patrick Stewart's history with the Borg, which I think is a big part of what makes this movie work.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty cool. Like, the Borg's history in Star Trek is very interesting and stuff. Cause I think it's Deep Space Nine with Jerry Ryan.
Is Jerry Ryan 7 of 9, or is that,
right. She's 7 of 9, who is a Borg, I think, or part Borg or something. And that's like, she's like the collective 7 of 9, right? That's like
she's on Voyager, not Voyager, Deep Space Nine.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, it's also weird too, like just thinking about the history of Star Trek movies, that they're always after the series ends. Like, why is there no TNG movies while TNG is on the air? They wait till that series ends.
I'm sure
they start making movies. It's like, what is going on?
They maybe would. I you know, it sort of transitions into a movie series, I guess. Like, TV to movie pipeline. I mean, I guess the reason why that didn't happen is because they were still making movies with the original cast, you know?
But yeah. I mean, that's fair, I guess. If you got them, you're not going to not use them, right? If they're on board to make 6 movies, you're going to make 6 movies with them.
Right. And they were like proven successes. Like, they were proven box office, never like runaway hits, but like good enough kind of thing, you know? And plus, we got Star Trek 6, The Undiscovered Country out of it, Mike, which is the best movie ever made. So,
fair. You know, good point.
There is that.
What I want to ask you is, did you have any like pop culture awareness of First Contact? Like any stuff that you're like, oh, that's from this or anything like that?
Not really. No, I mean, you know, pop culture awareness of Next Generation in general.
Right.
Not really from First Contact. You know, I feel like I had a lot of pop culture awareness for certain other Star Trek movies, like Star Trek 2. You know, there's a million scenes in that movie where you're like, yes, you know, all that's, you know, old Klingon proverb and all that stuff. Like, it's all there in Star Trek 2. And I knew that like Star Trek 4 was the one about the whales and all that. But I don't know, First Contact, I knew it was a Next Generation movie. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
I had nothing. I had nothing going into this. I did not know that the movie almost entirely takes place in Montana.
That's what I was going to ask.
Which was a fun discovery for me. I was like, I was sitting in my house in Montana and like did the Leo point to the screen and be like, yeah. Hey, that's where I am.
That's me. That's here. They're talking about here.
Yeah. So that was fun. And yeah, I love all that. I think the stuff with James Cromwell is the best stuff in the movie. Like, I think all the kind of time displaced stuff that, you know, sort of plays into comedy, but also him like kind of reckoning with the idea that he's going to be the most important person in history.
Yeah. Just doesn't want any of the responsibility. Yep.
Yeah. Is really great and really fun. And I love that the crew is just like totally giddy to be around him. They're like, they kind of have this like kind of hero worship of like sort of thing going on. And I think it's Riker and maybe Data. So like it's Riker and somebody else.
Geordi, like, I think. LaForge.
Oh, okay. LeVar Burton's character, right?
LeVar Burton, yeah.
Okay, yeah. They're just like hanging out in the ship like when he does the takeoff, you know, because it's like, I just want to be here to witness this. This is pretty cool. Also, I don't think we talk about this enough. Maybe people talked about this a lot when Next Generation was on TV or Next Generation fans talk about this. Riker is hot, man.
He's hot as fuck.
Like, especially in Generations. In First Contact, he's hot too. But like as soon as he walked on screen, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, no, Riker is number one who fucks, for sure.
Right. Well, in this movie, Data fucks. We should mention that too.
Yeah. I forgot. I mean, it's so... before we get to Data fucking, just everybody's so hot in this show. In the movie, everybody. It's so fun.
Yeah, you know, it was real watching Patrick Stewart and, you know, having known Patrick Stewart my entire life and like, but mostly knowing him for the X-Men movies where he's like, you know, in a wheelchair, he's the like enfeebled Professor Xavier. Right?
Yeah, prim and proper. Yeah.
Yeah. To see Patrick Stewart in a wife beater in this movie was quite a trip, man.
Yeah. Just beating the shit out of some Borgs and like smashing tables when he has that Captain Ahab moment too, right? It's just like all of that. Yeah, Beverly Crusher, Maria Sirtis is like, they're all just, everybody's so hot in this movie. It's crazy.
Yes. So that's a fun aspect of it too. And then you also got Alfred Woodard in this movie too, who has like sort of there's a flirtatious relationship with her and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Which is fun. They never like do anything with that. That would probably break the time stream or something. But
well, it's so funny too. Like also they keep mentioning like the Prime Directive, right? It's like they're so clearly violated. Like they are building the warp drive for Zevran Cochrane so he can.
Yes.
And it's like a whole fun time loop thing that like they have to do that so that they exist in the future.
Right. which is fun. And then also Neil McDonough's in this movie small role, or he gets he's like pretty prominent throughout like the first like act of the movie, and then he gets assimilated by the Borg, and there's the real like great cold-blooded moment where Picard shoots him, which is pretty cool. Dug
pretty
that
gnarly
a lot. Yeah,
and it's funny because I also couldn't really remember the like timeline of the series and stuff, so I was like, is this a prequel? Like I couldn't really remember. And
okay.
And then like, you know, like they like save Worf at the beginning of the fight with the Borg and stuff. And I was like, is this how they find Worf? Like, is this how he becomes a member of the crew? But it's like, oh no, this is all afterward. Like it's all, the show is over already. So that's fun. Cause I don't think Neil McDonough is in the show. I don't remember him. Unless he's in at the end of the show.
I think he just like pops up in this movie because he's not in Generations.
And
I think he's like, I think he's wearing a red shirt. I think he's like, you know, meant to be this movie's red shirt, right? So yeah, there's that. Also, I did also want to mention Michael Dorn, who plays Worf, is also in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, playing, I believe, Worf's grandfather.
No way.
He is Kirk's lawyer in the Klingon trial scene, and it rules.
That's awesome. But let's not forget that Data fucks. Let's go back to that.
Yeah, Data fucks in this movie, man. It's great. Really, really enjoyed it.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, like Data gets captured by the Borg, and there's the Borg Queen, played by Alice Krieg, who is she was like the evil witch in Gretel and Hansel, the Osgood Perkins movie a couple years ago. But she's great in this movie. She's really fun. And yeah, she's like, you know, sort of seducing Data, and Data has this like moment of weakness, which he later describes as like, oh, it was like 0.08 seconds or whatever. Like he was never actually going to betray the crew. But Data like mentions like, you know, they talk about seduction and he's like, oh, well, of course I'm programmed with all the seduction techniques and, you know, all that stuff. But it has been a long time since he's had to use it. And Data fucks in this.
I love it's so funny to you that moment where she asks like, how long has it been since you've used all these techniques? And he's like, well, quite some time. And then there's a beat. And then he says precisely down to the second. it's like it works in a like, yeah, he's a robot. So like, of course, but like also he's counting. it's so funny. And the idea that like she, the Borg queen like grafts like living human tissue onto him and gives him goosebumps. And he's just like, ugh, like it's so crazy. His ultimate dream to be human, to have emotions or whatever, you know?
Right. And so that's something that I assume is part of the TV show, right? That he's like, he wants to be human,
yeah,
or
I think that's part of the, yeah. I think that's sort of like his whole underlying thing.
Okay, because Generations gives him like an emotion chip, like he can feel emotions now, which does result in a great moment, which I did know from just memes, where he is like he's at a bar or something, and he like has a drink, and it's like, oh, that is disgusting, and so he's like, more, please,
yeah.
So there was that, which was fun, but Data fucks in this movie. It's a great time.
That's fun. What else?
They say Star Trek in the movie. We should mention that. They say something along the lines of like, I can't believe you spacemen are on some kind of Star Trek. Something along those lines, which is great. Love that.
Hilarious. I love the scene when they're on Earth right after they've, the Borg, when they come back in time to this moment, they like airstrike Cochrane's ship or whatever, right? They're trying to just stop him from ever achieving warp speed so that they don't have first contact. But they don't know if he died, like when the Enterprise, the crew, they come to find them and he's missing and all this stuff. And then it's Riker and it's Marina Sirtis is the actress's name. I can't remember her character, but she's found Cochrane in a bar. And she's like having to drink with him to convince him, or like it's this whole thing. And she's like never been drunk before. She's like, I don't know, shots of something called tequila. And she like can't stand up straight. And he's just blaring rockabilly music on the jukebox and stuff.
Yes.
Very, very funny.
Yeah, that's fun. I also wanted to mention this movie is directed by Jonathan Frakes, who plays Riker.
Yes.
Which is sort of in keeping with the Star Trek tradition. Leonard Nimoy directed two movies. William Shatner directed a movie. Jonathan Frakes directed two movies. He directed this one and he directed Insurrection. Which is the next one. And Jonathan, he's also, I think, directed like a lot of episodes of the show and has directed other Star Trek episodes like beyond that. Like I know he directed Deep Space Nine and I think he directed some Picard episodes and all that stuff. So I think he mostly directs now and is mostly like a TV director. But I did want to mention, so Jonathan Frakes directs. I think he does a very good job directing. It looks great. But he was not the original choice to direct,
really?
Mike. If you look at the Wikipedia page, like at the beginning of the page, it says two high profile directors turned down the chance to direct Star Trek First Contact. And then if you dig a little deeper, it tells you who those directors are.
Who is it?
Ridley Scott was one of them. And John McTiernan was also one of them, which, both would have been wild. Like either one of those would have been crazy to see their Star Trek movie. But I think ultimately, I mean, they both turned it down. But I think the studio and the writers of the movie, I think the writers, from what I kind of was seeing, were they were all very aware that Generations was not that well received. And like if they were going to make the Next Generation cast work on screen, it had to be with this movie or else like, there wasn't going to be more Next Generation movies.
Right.
You know, and so they kind of were like, we need somebody who like really knows Star Trek. And Jonathan Frakes was the guy. He's in Star Trek.
He's right there.
Yeah. And so that kind of became the thing. But I thought that was kind of a cool detail. They're like, oh man, Ridley Scott could have directed this movie. John McTiernan could have directed this movie.
That's crazy. I can't help but think of that one like video that's Jonathan Frakes saying no for 8 minutes or whatever. Like,
right. Yeah.
From that whatever like Unsolved Mystery show he was the host of. Very fun.
Yes, absolutely. Also, James Cromwell, I think the writers wanted him for this movie and he got the part. But the studio, they wanted Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks was their pick for Zefram Cochrane in this movie. And I guess Tom Hanks was like a big fan of Star Trek. So they were like, you know, who we can get him. I think we can like get him in this movie. But yeah, Jonathan Frakes was like, yeah, Hanks is too like well known for that. That like, we needed somebody like more of a character actor for that part. And James Cromwell fit the bill. He's great. He's the farmer from Babe. Love him.
Yeah, yeah. He's so funny in this too. Like we were saying that this whole alcoholic farmer thing he's got going and how he doesn't want to be famous and you know, the weight of that being the most important human that's ever lived. And like you're about to usher in. I loved the idea of the, you know, they talk about being like in a post-currency, post-money world, right? That's the whole like Star Trek utopian fantasy thing.
Yeah, a real fantasy.
A real fantasy. And they tell him that like, you know, you achieving this flight ushers in an era of peace and it'll solve poverty and hunger and war and conflict and humanity will go to the stars, right? And he's like, he that's what the conflict, the shame is that he admits like he built this whole thing because somebody was going to pay him a lot of money to buy this technology if it works. And that's all that matters.
I wanted to retire on a private island with beautiful women was basically what he wanted to do with this.
Fascinating.
I love James Cromwell in this movie. And then also Patrick Stewart, great in this movie. Like really, really phenomenal. And I think does a really good job of like, you know, again, I don't have a lot of the background of his relationship with the Borg, but I feel it in his performance in this movie.
Yeah.
Where you can really tell he's like, you know, this is a personal matter for him to the degree where it ultimately ends up being compared to Captain Ahab looking for Moby Dick. Mm-hmm. I found that to be a pretty fascinating, you know, I think it's one of those things where it seems like an obvious comparison, like in retrospect, but like when it happens, you're like, ah, yes, I see.
I see. Yeah.
I see what's going on here.
Yeah, I love that whole thing and how he doesn't even realize it. And that's like also like Picard's whole like shtick is that Kirk too, right? Like that, like he knows all the classics and he's Shakespeare and like all that stuff too.
Yeah.
So for him to like not make that connection himself is pretty fun. And yeah, he's chasing the Borg, man. They gave him trauma, PTSD.
Yeah.
He has that nightmare dream at the beginning of him being Locutus or whatever when he was his Borg self.
Right.
And he's not going to let it happen anymore. And even saves Data because he knows what a terrible fate this will be if he lets Data.
Yeah. He saves Data, saves the Enterprise, saves the crew. And and he is like more of an action hero in this movie, which is also pretty fun to see. I feel like, you know, my perception of Picard, again, having a minimal, you know, having seen Next Generation a little bit, I was like, oh yeah, he's like the intellectual. Kirk is the, you know, the brash action hero guy. And Picard is the intellectual. He likes to hang out in the holodeck and read Shakespeare or whatever. Right. But
solve crimes.
But in this one, he's gunning down Borgs here, like, you know, in the hallway and all that. I mean, literally gunning them down with a Tommy gun in the holodeck. Which is great.
So fun.
Love that for him. That was great. Yeah. Any other random scenes in Star Trek First Contact you want to talk about, Mike? Any other stuff that we should bring up?
No, I think that specifically that one scene, it's when they've done the launch. They're in space.
Yeah.
And the Enterprise which at this point has been assimilated, right? They don't know. This is actually when the Borg Queen tells Data to like shoot Cochrane out of the sky, basically before they go to warp. And there's a moment. It's like this is like the gif from this movie where James Cromwell turns and looks out the window and sees the Enterprise, and he goes, "Sweet Jesus!" And he just like has this crazy moment. Like it's the most insane take, and it's like this is the one that we're using. Very fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I am like, you know, I'm probably going to watch Star Trek Insurrection and Star Trek Nemesis now. I hope too soon. Just to complete the series.
Say you did it.
Just to say I did it. That once I do those, I'll have seen every Star Trek movie, you know, and so I got to do it. But I've heard they're bad. I don't know. Have you seen Insurrection or Nemesis, Mike?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I've ever seen them.
Okay. I know Tom Hardy's in one of them. I think he's in Nemesis.
That's cool.
So that's something. I know. And yeah, I know Jonathan Frakes directed the next one. So it can't be that bad based on First Contact, right?
Right?
Maybe.
It's got to be good.
So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I want to watch those. And then I also kind of want to rewatch the Abrams trilogy, the reboot trilogy. Because I haven't watched any of those since Star Trek Beyond came out. I really loved Star Trek 09 when it came out. Saw it in theaters like two or three times and watched it a couple of times since. And Beyond, I think I watched the one time, but really liked it. It's really just Star Trek Into Darkness that tanks the whole thing. That's, you know, it's that Rise of Skywalker of that Star Trek trilogy. You know, it's just the one that like, I look back on the whole trilogy less fondly because of this one bad movie.
Yeah, I recently thought about...
That's the Abrams special that we can get.
That's the Abrams special, for sure. I recently thought about going back and rewatching Rise of Skywalker just to... Because I only saw it, I think, the one time in theaters. And I was just like, nah.
Yeah,
it's just why am I going to do that to myself?
I've seen Rise of Skywalker twice. I saw it the one time in theaters, and that was the first time since they've been making new Star Wars movies that I didn't see a Star Wars movie twice in theaters.
Wow.
I saw it the one time in theaters, was severely disappointed. We did our episode about it.
Yeah.
And you guys sort of talked about enough stuff that you liked in it where I was like, maybe there's something pretty good here. And then I watched it again a month later. I got the Blu-ray and watched it at home, and I was like, no, this is worse. This is actively the worst Star Wars movie. This sucks. Which is a real shame. And it's a shame how, I liked Force Awakens when it came out, and I still like Force Awakens. I think it's a pretty good movie, and I love Last Jedi. I think Last Jedi is great, but it is a weird thing where, because Rise of Skywalker shit the bed so badly,
yeah,
that entire trilogy feels tainted in some way. If it had even just been okay, I think everybody would look upon those movies a lot better, you know?
Yeah, but somehow the dead speak, or whatever that first line is, somehow Palpatine has risen, right? Or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, you got both. I mean, the opening crawl starts with the dead speak, and then, minutes later, Poe Dameron, Oscar Isaac, comes out and it says somehow Palpatine returns. And we're all just like, all right, I guess.
Sure.
I guess Palpatine's back. I think honestly, my main issue with that movie, we're getting off topic, I guess, a little bit, but it's Abrams made two movies in both of them, so it counts. My main issue with that movie is that it weirdly felt the need to be a finale to all of Star Wars.
Right.
You know, it only had to be the finale to the sequel trilogy. It only had to be the finale to 7, 8, and 9. But for some reason, they felt the pressure to be the finale to all 9 movies. And I think completely buckled under that pressure.
Yes. Totally caved to the backlash of Last Jedi, which ends,
I mean, that too. Yeah.
Ends on such a hopeful, anyone can be a, we don't have to get into it. I'm sorry. We don't need it.
We don't
but
need
that
to
kid picking up the broom with the Force is the coolest shit that's ever happened in Star Wars. And then they ruined it.
Yeah. I mean, well, the coolest shit that happens in Star Wars happens about an hour before where the lightspeed thing happens through the ship.
So okay. I forgot about that. You're right.
That's the best thing ever. But I do think that the ending of Last Jedi is open-ended enough where it almost feels like you have enough closure with just those two movies, Force Awakens and Last Jedi. Like, you don't need Rise of Skywalker. you could just be like, oh yes, the battle rages on, and more and more will join the fight, and that's a good place to end it.
Yeah. And similarly, First Contact ends with them returning to the 24th century.
Yes, they make it back.
They make it back. Which, they create their own existence.
Yes. In case you were in doubt, the good guys win at the end of Star Trek First Contact, and they make it back to their own time, which is great. I think the time travel stuff in Star Trek is often my favorite stuff. Looking back at some of these movies, Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home rules. It's fantastic. That is the one with the whales.
Yes.
Where they travel back in time to the 1980s to save humpback whales, and it's a great time.
It's so funny. I don't know. I wonder how much they did time travel stuff on the original series, on the TV show.
Yeah.
But it's so funny to see just how casually they have time travel now. It's
never a big deal. It's something they can just easily do.
Yeah. They're just the at the beginning of this movie, they're like, oh, the Borg have, like I said, opened a temporal tunnel or whatever. And Worf is just time travel. What? Nobody flinches at all. Just go back 300 years.
It's so easy to do. And it makes you wonder, what do they need the holodeck for? If they can just time travel back to any period.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. And then thinking about Michelle Yeoh in Discovery, that they kill her in that two-part pilot and stuff. And then they do some timey-wimey shit to bring her back. But now she's the Emperor of Earth or whatever. And it's that's so fun. It's so fun that Star Trek can just be who gives a shit? They're from 200 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, I think the Michelle Yeoh case, she's from a parallel universe or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Where she didn't die or something like that, and then comes into ours. And that we'll follow up on that in Star Trek Section 31, the TV movie that'll be based on Michelle Yeoh's character. So got to catch up on Star Trek Discovery to see see what's going on there.
Got a lot to watch.
Yeah, I do there are so many Star Trek shows going on right now. And Star Trek Discovery, I think, is ending or has ended or something like that. It's in its final season.
I don't even know. Yeah, I think so. Because then there's also Oh man, I can't remember the name. It's another space station one, I think.
There's Lower Decks, which is the cartoon show.
That's the cartoon.
There's Discovery, and then there's also Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
That's what I'm thinking of. Strange New Worlds, yeah.
Which I believe is a prequel to Discovery, or it features Captain Pike, and it's like mostly the original series cast, but like you're the original series characters. So it's like it's Uhura, it's Spock, it's all that kind of stuff. I guess it must be a prequel to Discovery, because Discovery is later, right? Or maybe actually Discovery might be the prequel.
I think Discovery is a prequel because that opening pilot, two-part pilot, is when the Romulans, I think, or the Klingons reawaken, right? Or
something like that. Yeah,
I don't remember.
Which is what makes Star Trek VI so cool.
Yeah.
It's about the Klingons sort of coming into the fold of the Federation. Like they are genuinely looking for peace. Mm-hmm. They are trying to end their wartime ways. And that's like, you know, controversial among the Klingon people. But in order for their survival, they have to do it. And so the Enterprise is tasked with escorting the Klingon ambassador, or like the leader of the Klingons, to Earth so they can sign the peace treaty and all that kind of stuff. But while they're doing that, the Klingon leader is killed and Kirk and McCoy are framed for it.
No. Not my boys.
It's such a good premise for it. And then there's the great trial in the Klingon area where Kirk and McCoy are thrown into a Klingon prison and they have to escape. And Spock, meanwhile, has to figure out who framed Kirk and McCoy. It's fantastic.
Wow.
So, so good. Star Trek VI. First Contact was great, but Star Trek VI, man, out of this world. Better than Star Trek II.
I think you're full on approaching Star Trek guy levels. I think you're getting there.
I think I'm getting there. I think once I start regularly watching one of the shows, I think I'll fully be there. And so, like I said, when we talked about Star Trek Discovery on the Michelle Yeoh pod, part of me was like, maybe I should keep watching this. It seems like it'd be a fun show to keep watching. Never did. I watched that pilot episode and never continued. And from what I've heard, it's not a super well-liked show among Star Trek fans. But I have heard that Star Trek Strange New Worlds is great. I've heard really good things about that show and how inventive it is. I know there's a musical episode at one point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the one where I'm like, if I'm going to get into a Star Trek show, that's probably the one I'm going to check out. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know.
There you go. While you're in between chapters of Dune, you could watch an episode of Strange New Worlds.
As I've said, I'm becoming a Dune guy and becoming a Star Trek guy. That's my goal.
Now that you're in your 30s, you've earned your right.
Yes, exactly. It's less embarrassing now. I don't have to care about what people think.
Yes.
But yeah. Also, I wanted to mention real quick one scene in Star Trek First Contact that I really liked is there's the scene where Picard and Worf sort of have a standoff, or they have like an argument, and Picard is threatening the safety of the Enterprise in order to get the Borg, and Worf is telling him not to do that, and Picard snaps at him and insults him in some way, and then a few minutes later he comes back to the ship and apologizes to Worf, and I think it's a really touching scene.
Is that when he orders everybody to abandon the Enterprise and he's gonna blow it, self-destruct the ship or something, right? And Worf is no. They have a little bit of a fight. It's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Rocks. Okay, any last thoughts about Star Trek First Contact before I start wrapping this up, Mike?
No, I think just broadly, even for a movie like this, which is, the eighth Star Trek movie, it's whatever, all this stuff, we just used to have movies. These are sets in real, real things. It's dudes with plastic fucking tape to their face to look like the poor. It's like actual stuff.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Bring back stuff in movies.
Bring back things. Yeah.
Bring back things. That's all we need. And also make a new Star Trek movie. Come on, you cowards. Do it. Do it.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, I mean, you got that reboot cast right there who are so good.
Oh my God, they can't afford those guys anymore. There's no way.
I mean, who do you got? I think you can afford Zachary Quinto.
Okay, yeah, I guess what else is he doing?
Yeah, exactly. That's what he must be doing something, but I don't know what. I think he's mostly a theater guy.
Yeah.
Chris Pine, pretty big. He's pretty big these days. Anton Yelchin, dead.
Can't
get him. Carl Urban, I think you can get him. I mean, he's on The Boys now.
Yeah.
Right, so that's kind of his big thing. But I think he would come back for a Star Trek movie.
I think so.
Zoe Saldana.
She's Gamora. She's too much.
Gamora and Neytiri. But she was doing all that when the Star Trek movies are coming out too. I guess she was doing Avatar when Star Trek came out, but Guardians was a few years away. Now she might be a little big. Yeah.
Pegg, Mr. Mission Impossible himself. He can't.
He was already doing Mission Impossible then too. Simon Pegg could come back first. He wrote Star Trek Beyond.
It's just fun to pretend that the most likely person to come back is too big to come back.
he would come back for almost nothing. I think he just loves Star Trek. He would love playing Scotty again. I think so.
Who else? There's one more guy.
Who else is in that cast? You got Man, I remember Alice Eve was in Star Trek Into Darkness, but she's not one of the main crew.
Yeah.
Peter Weller was in that movie too.
Was he? I don't remember Peter Weller. Is he like an admiral or some shit?
Something like that, yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch was the bad guy, but Peter Weller, I think, is the one who like warns them about Khan or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else we got? Who are we forgetting about in the Star Trek?
John Cho.
Oh yeah, John Cho. I think he would do it. No?
Yeah, probably, I guess.
Right? Come on.
I think that's the main cast.
That pretty much covers it, I think. I'm doing a quick cross-reference right now. You got Zachary Quinto as Spock, Carl Urban as McCoy, Zoe Saldana as Uhura, Simon Pegg as Scotty, John Cho as Sulu, Anton Yelchin was Chekhov, RIP, Bruce Greenwood was Pike.
That's right.
That was cool. I liked Bruce Greenwood in it. I think he dies in 09, right?
I think so, yeah.
Or, and Eric Bana was the bad guy.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that one also involved time travel. It involved him traveling from the prime time line, like that split off into a separate whole thing, and that's why Leonard Nimoy was
Spock,
in it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Leonard Nimoy, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's truly, you know, Star Trek 09 was like the prototype for Force Awakens, like in terms of like what the legacy sequel became.
100%. Yeah.
That's like very much what it was. And I remember when J.J. Abrams was announced as the director for Force Awakens, my main thought was like, yeah, that makes sense. He already made a Star Wars movie. Like his Star Trek is very much just Star Wars.
Right.
So, yeah.
Remember Eric Bana? I wonder what he's doing.
Eric Bana, what is he up to these days? He played Captain Nero in Star Trek 09. He was in Deliver Us from Evil in 2014. He played the title role in a true crime miniseries called Dirty John in 2018.
Okay, all right.
So there was that. He was the voice of Monterey Jack in the Disney Plus original movie Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Ah.
So there was that. Yeah, hasn't really been doing too much. Have not a lot of big Eric Bana movies in the filmography lately. I think the biggest one in the last few years was King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
I remember that movie, I think.
I definitely remember seeing trailers for it. Never watched it. That was a Guy Ritchie joint. A Guy Ritchie joint starring Charlie Hunnam.
Whoa. Oh, yeah, I did see that then.
You saw it?
I did see that, yeah.
Okay, how was it?
I think it's pretty good. It's a Guy Ritchie movie. I think David Hansen's in it, maybe. Anyway, that's fun. I've been meaning to rewatch Munich lately.
I mean, Munich rocks.
Munich's what I'm thinking about Eric Bana.
Yeah, it's a very good movie. Also, I remember there's like a scene in Knocked Up where they talk about how good Eric Bana is in Munich.
Incredible. What a wild pull to have a Knocked Up reference, which is actually a reference to Munich.
Yes, I just remember that being like, that. Like it was funny, but it like weirdly took me out of the movie. It's like, that's such a very specific thing for them to do. And then Judd Apatow's next movie was Funny People, which featured Eric Bana. He was in it. So
time travel, just like in Star Trek First Contact.
Exactly. All right, Star Trek First Contact. It's good. People should watch it.
Yes. Ditto.
Yes. So thanks to David for donating $50 to the Ko-fi page to make us watch Star Trek First Contact. And like David has done, you can do it anytime you want. $50, drop it to Ko-fi, and we will review any movie that you want to make us review within reason, or if you want to give us a topic for a Let's Rank. No one's ever taken us up on that yet.
Yeah.
But if anybody wants to make us do a Let's Rank of something or whatever, we'll figure that out. So donate $50 to the Ko-fi page. It can happen.
Yes, ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods is where you can do that. It'd be exciting to we have another one next week or coming up soon. I don't know what our timeline is.
Yeah, next week is the timeline. So yeah, we have another Ko-fi donation episode happening next week on Mike and Mike Go to the Movies.
Yes, it's going to be more Dragon Ball. Can't wait.
Yes, I was about to reveal that in a minute after we did the plugs. But
RIP. Well, time travel.
Hoo-hoo.
Make it happen now? I don't know. I lost the thread.
All right, Mike D, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter and Letterboxd and Blue Sky. You can also find the podcast on Blue Sky now.
Yeah.
MikeAndMikePods.bsky.social. Get over there. Be one of the first 10 people to follow us or whatever.
Yeah. Mike D set that up today. He is entirely in charge of the Blue Sky accounts. So
there's no rules on Blue Sky because there's not a lot of us over there.
Exactly.
But it's fun because everybody's nice.
That is the nice thing about Blue Sky. I should start using it again for that reason.
Yes. But get over there. But so you can do, like we said, donate at the Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods. And if you want merch, we have merch available on our Redbubble, which is MikeAndMikePods.redbubble.com.
Yes, indeed. And you can find me online at msmithfilmblog on Twitter, Mike Smith Film on Letterboxd, Radio Mike Sandwich Instagram. Thanks so much for listening to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCrescio. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to to contact us, you can hit us up at Mike and Mike Pod on Twitter, or like Mike said, on Blue Sky. And you can find the rest of our podcast on Rapture Press, alongside many other podcasts, but all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. So next week, because someone paid us to do it, we are, you know, what's weird is that this episode was sort of a follow-up to a different Ko-fi donation episode with Star Trek 2.
Yeah.
Next week, same thing. It's a follow-up to a different Ko-fi donation episode.
Yes.
So a few months back, this same person made us watch Dragon Ball Super Broly.
Yep.
Which I was very excited about because I'm a huge Dragon Ball fan, and I've been rewatching Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z over the last, like, I guess 2 years at this point. And in recent weeks, we had the sad news that Akira Toriyama, creator of Dragon Ball, has passed away. And that was a real bummer. I was very sad about it. But this person came back, donated $50 to the podcast, and they're going to make us watch another Dragon Ball movie. They gave us the choice this time.
Yes.
So they allowed us to choose between Dragon Ball Z, Battle of Gods, or Dragon Ball Superhero. Now, I have not seen either of these movies. I'm looking forward to both of them. I had planned to watch both of them at some point anyway, once I got to them, like, in my watch, because I've seen, as I mentioned on that Dragon Ball podcast, I've seen all of Dragon Ball. I am in the middle of my Dragon Ball Z rewatch. Since then, I'm, like, right at the tail end of the Frieza saga now. So I still got, like, 6 seasons to go, but, like, you know, I'm getting there. It's going to take a while.
Yeah.
But once I get through Dragon Ball Z, my plan is to watch Dragon Ball Super, which I've never seen. And I'm excited about that. But as a result, I have less context for what happens in Super. And so we watched Dragon Ball Super Broly sort of out of context, and I was thinking about Dragon Ball Super Superhero because I've heard it's really good. However, I think my choice, because this is basically entirely up to me which one we're going to talk
for
about.
Sure.
I think my choice is going to be Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods.
Okay.
The reasoning for this choice is that Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods takes place right after Dragon Ball Z, which is, like, I know the events of Dragon Ball Z. I'm aware of what happens.
Got it.
And also, this movie became the basis of the first season of Dragon Ball Super. So, like, later this movie gets expanded on into, like, a full season of TV. So I figured, okay, well, I'll watch this movie now, get a gist of it, and then later I won't have to watch it. Like, I'll just be able to jump right into Dragon Ball Super.
Right. Yeah. You have the context for where this movie's coming from, and you get a little preview for where the season's going.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's the plan. So Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods, that is going to be the episode next week. And if you really want us to talk about Dragon Ball Super Superhero, donate $50 more and we will, and we'll do it.
Anybody can.
Anybody can. Does not have to be the same person. It can be anybody.
That kind of sounded like a threat. So I just want to say anybody can do this.
Yeah.
The way you said that. Very good. Yeah, yes. I'm excited for Dragon Ball. I liked Broly. Broly was fun, but definitely felt in that movie like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I don't know who any of these people are.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to that episode, it is me explaining to Mike what's happening in the movie for a lot of it.
Exactly.
But yeah, I had a great time with that one. So looking forward to Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods next week on the podcast. And in the meantime, The Complete Works will be returning soon with season 4. And like we said, all the episodes over here, they're going to start getting published on both feeds. So you can go over to The Complete Works, subscribe over there, and start listening to the episodes on that feed. Do it.
Yes, we dare you. Actually, we beg you.
Yes. All right. That is the end of this week's episode of Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. We will see you on the other side.